Hello and welcome to the Android Central podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, no more Note? Yeah, it could happen in 2021. The Note may be dead. We'll talk about why and what could replace it. There are a lot of milestones this week. Microsoft's Windows 1.0 turns 35. And far less important, Stadia just celebrated its first birthday. We also have the release of the Pixel 4a 5G, as well as a beautiful, barely blue Pixel 4a that we'll talk about. And Google just spent the whole week announcing new stuff, and we'll talk about some of those announcements, including a very, very big overhaul of Google Pay, which I know Joe Maring absolutely loves. And then if we get to it later on, how do you yeet a fleet? Or is that a tweet? I don't even know. Hayato, the millennial, will explain it for us in detail. So let's do some intros. R. Wagner,
what do you think about fleets? We finally got a colored Pixel 4a.
Oh, okay, so we're not talking about fleets.
We got it 3 months too late, but we got one.
Yeah, we did. It's fun. It's blue. It's not available in Canada, so I don't care. You're all dead to me.
I want one. Yeah,
it's a very, very nice color. It's got that orange power button. We'll get to it. It's delicious. Joe Maring, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the 60 degree Fahrenheit weather here in the superior scale for gauging temperatures. So it's a nice day here.
Not going there. And Hayato Huseman, what's going on?
Hey, I'll be your Celsius dissenter for the day, as discussed in our pre-show.
We were arguing over what is the better scale, and this became they teamed up on me, a bunch of American bullies right here. All right, so let's get into it. I think it's worth just jumping right into this rumor. And you know, I think it's got more legs than just a rumor at this point. But it is still a rumor that the Note line is dead. 2021 we'll see only Galaxy S and Galaxy Z Fold phones released by Samsung.
Just Z Fold, or we're still keeping the flip along?
Sorry. Around, right? Foldy phones. Didn't mean to imply you like four Z Flip owners there.
I know.
So, but there are major implications for this, right? We've been complaining since like the Galaxy Note 5 that the convergence between S and Note has become pretty indistinguishable, and yet it's persisted, and yet, the Note 20 Ultra was by far the best Note ever. It was by far the best Samsung phone of the year, other than the Z Fold 2, which was like almost twice the price. Hayato, let's dig into this, because along with the rumor that there would be no Note series in 2021, the S series, in particular the S21 Ultra, may actually support the S Pen, even if there's no depot, there's no like stylus holder inside the phone itself. What do you think of these rumors?
So, you know, I really like the Note series in general. It tends to be my favorite lineup my favorite part of Samsung's lineup every year. But, you know, I mean, every year it seems like the sort of criticism is the same. Like, this is just a Galaxy S phone with a pen. And not everybody wants a pen, so not everybody really cares. What I like about the Note series in general is that it's sort of Samsung's mid-cycle refresh, right? So like it, particularly this year with the S20 Ultra having as many focusing problems as it had, you know, the Note 20 Ultra came along, it's got the exact same camera, but they added some laser autofocus, so now it focuses just fine. I always view the Note as sort of Samsung's chance to fix any of the problems they had earlier in the year. So I'm kind of sad to see that is going to go away, but it does make sense that they would just sort of start to integrate the pen because there are so many other similarities in its non-Note devices. So I guess my only uncertainty here is trying to figure out what they're going to do as far as the pen goes with the S21 Ultra that we've seen so far, because none of the leaks, none of the rumors have shown any sort of, you know, magnetic attachment on the back, like on the Galaxy Tab. There's a really clear marking on the back of the tablets where the S Pen is supposed to attach. That's not on the S21 Ultra. I'm not really sure where the pen is going to go when you're not using it, how it's going to charge, or if it's going to charge. Maybe they'll just get rid of Bluetooth altogether and go back to the whatever they used before.
Like a passive stylus, didn't have to charge.
Well, it was sort of active, right? Because you could still do the hovering gestures where you could like have a cursor if you hold it just a couple millimeters away from the screen.
Yeah, but I don't think there was a battery in the stylus itself. I think that was all done using the OLED display. It was detecting a capacitance on the tip of the S Pen. I may be wrong about that, but I don't think that was battery powered at all.
Yeah, I mean it's been a few years, right? Like we've had the sort of Bluetooth since the Note 9, I think.
Yeah, Note 8 or 9. But
yeah,
I mean, again, like it reinforces the fact that like nobody really took advantage of any of those Bluetooth features.
Yeah. Well, so actually the one that I really did like was the remote shutter for the camera, because, you know, I mean, a lot of the other Bluetooth features were kind of silly. They had the air gestures where you could basically replace the gesture navigation on screen by swiping the pen in different directions. It didn't really work very well. It was kind of not very useful. But the shutter button in particular, especially, you know, back in the before times when you could take group selfies with your friends, it was so useful to just like prop the phone up against something and you could hold the S Pen, hit the button and take a photo. But you know, without Bluetooth, you can't really do that. And that's one thing I would be sad to see go.
Okay, so Ara, let's just talk about the S Pen in general, because there's still a contingent of loyal S Pen stands, right? There are people who will go out and buy a Note every year. This change in strategy from Samsung by giving the Ultra, right? If there's only one Ultra in the year, it'll be the S series Ultra. Giving that phone compatibility with an S Pen, but it'll be an extra. It'll be something you either have to buy or store if it is in the box with the S21 Ultra. How does that change the way that people use it, right? Do they just store it in their pants or their pocket or their bag? Do they just leave it at home and then only, you know, how does it affect the way that people will interact with it at all?
Well, one hope that I have, which is never going to happen because it would make far too much sense, is that Samsung, instead of using the dedicated like Bluetooth S Pen, would swap over to using USI styluses the way that most modern Chromebooks and touchscreen Windows laptops have been doing for the last couple of years. USI stylus compatibility has been something that's been slowly rolling out. And if Samsung used that for the S Pen on the S21 Ultra or whatever they're going to call it, I feel like that could make things easier both for Samsung and for users, because that means, oh, I can leave my fancy Samsung stylus at home where I won't lose it, and I can use a cheaper other USI stylus like at work or in my purse or something, so that way I don't have to worry about losing it quite as much if they're not going to have that slot on there. Although I do have to say, if you're making a phone that big and one of the selling points is the stylus compatibility, why the heck would you just not put the slot on the bottom? I understand it's a lot of real estate inside the phone, but come on, guys.
No, well, that's the whole point, is that the phone, like the S20 Ultra versus the Note 20 Ultra, the battery was the big difference, right? It was a 500 milliamp hour difference. That's significant, especially today when everybody wants multi-day battery life. You know,
Can we make the back a little thicker and not have that huge chungus camera module on the back? I mean, like, come on, that seems like a pretty reasonable trade-off there, doesn't it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't like the bump either, but I think making the back thicker to meet the bump, you know, most of the way would add weight, right? It would just feel bulky in the hand. It would be less comfortable to hold. It's just, I don't think it's a trade-off that anybody wants.
They're going to stick it in a case anyway.
Cases.
But also, Hayato, you've used the Z Fold 2, and you know that thing's a chunky boy. You know, clearly people are willing to put up with extra bulk on their phones if it means getting extra features.
Yeah, but I do think that, like, I'm generally a fan of making phones a little bit thicker to put a bigger battery in there. But I think that becomes less and less ideal the bigger the phone is in every other dimension, right? Like if you've got something that's the size of a Galaxy Note or an iPhone 12 Pro Max or whatever else, like making those thicker, I think makes them considerably harder to use versus making something small like a Pixel 5 or 4a or something a little bit thicker.
I mean, to be fair, that phone is going to be huge and heavy no matter what you do to it.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, why make that worse just to add a slightly bigger battery when they could take out the silo for the S Pen and get the same thing accomplished without thickening the phone?
Well, I wonder, too, if, like, another possibility, like, if they wanted to retain those Bluetooth features, how much extra space it would add to do kind of, like, a magnet system that you see on, like, the iPad Pro and the Galaxy Tab S7. Like, I know the ergonomics for that on a smartphone form factor could be a little awkward, but... I mean, if they want to keep that placement on there without like a case or something, that could potentially be another route they go for that.
All right, hear me out. Apple Pencil first gen with that little plug at the very end.
Oh, God.
Plug your pen right into into your phone.
S Pen or a USB-C powered S Pen.
God, yeah, I hate it.
That's an idea for the fireplace.
Is there any chance that they would do something for a power user of a, like, Galaxy Buds, whatever, but it has the S Pen slot underneath, so all of it wirelessly charges in one device that's easy to take with you?
So I've heard that there may be a case that does fit neatly into the S21 Ultra that does have a silo for the S Pen. So, you know, it may be one of those foldable, like, folio cases that everybody seems to love, but in that case there would be a slot for the S Pen, and that might be a couple, you know, it might be a solution, Samsung offering two or three different case options, all of which have the stylus included, and you just pop the phone into the case and then the stylus would just be in there. I think that's a good compromise.
And from a business perspective too, it means they get to sell not only the S Pen as extra but also the case extra too, so they're just making more money from accessories there as opposed to like bundling that silo or something in the phone.
Yeah. So the downside to that kind of case though, I mean, aside from I just don't like folio cases in general, but mm-hmm. even if you don't mind those, like having to add room on the side to hold the S Pen just means you're making your phone even wider, which kind of goes back to the whole making your phone bigger and less comfortable to use kind of issue.
Yeah, I mean, there's a potential it would be included in the hinge. Like the part of the case that folds over, mm-hmm. you could put a little slot in there for the S Pen, similar to what the Surface Pro X does with its cover case.
Oh, it's so clever on that thing, though.
It is. I don't know if Samsung would do that, but it's possible. I mean, engineering wise, their cases are pretty good. You can bet also that there may be a magnet style solution involved in those cases. So there may not be the phone itself may not be magnetized, but the case may be magnetized for the S Pen.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are tons of possibilities here. I don't think Samsung's going to leave Note users out in the lurch, but I do want to explore the replacements. So part of this rumor that posits no Note phone in 2021 also says that Samsung is going to expand the Z Fold and Z Flip line. They will launch a Z Fold FE Fan Edition, which will presumably be the cheapest Fold the company's released so far, right? Every Fold that there have been three or two, I guess.
Two and a half.
And they've all been $2,000, right? The Z Flip was about, what, $1,300 bucks? So we have yet to see a Samsung foldable below $1,000. The FE could be that first device to reach that price point. Joe, what is your take on this, right? Foldables are going into their third year, and we clearly haven't seen the prices drop as quickly as we'd like to.
I mean, I would be all for, you know, something to, even if it's just like $999, something that's more in line with kind of like the flagship phones we're used to. Because, like, as interested as I've been in the Z Fold 2 and the Z Flip, like, I just personally can't justify spending, like, $1,400 or almost $2,000 on a new phone like that, you know, even given everything they do compared to, you know, a regular smartphone. So, I mean, if Samsung can hit that $1,000 price tag, I think that definitely opens up the appeal for that form factor a lot more. And that's going to be the ticket to really getting, you know, foldables in general to kind of become more of a mainstream thing, where they're definitely kind of like a niche product right now.
I mean, how likely do you think, though, that it could drop the price of the Fold down to $1,000 or less, though? Like, I think it's more realistic to think about it kind of hitting like the $1,400-$1,500 price range, like their Note Ultra, just because, you know, that's asking for them to cut the price in half on the Fold versus like a Z Flip Fan Edition. I could see being $1,000, but a Fold, I don't see that happening at all.
Oh, if they give us a Flip Fan Edition, that needs to be $800 or less.
Yeah, I would say so.
I think it comes down to the silicon, right? We know that the Snapdragon 800 series has just pushed prices beyond what we thought possible a couple of years ago. But I think it's realistic for Samsung to put the successor to the 765G in a folding phone and bring that price below $1,000. Obviously, other cuts could be made. There are two selfie cameras on all these Z Flip phones or Z Fold phones, right? There's one on the outside and on the inside. You cut one of those. There's tons of little places that Samsung, you make it plastic the way that they did the FE and the Note 20. That could save a ton of money as well. So there are areas where now that the process for building the hinge more reliably and at scale probably has dropped the cost, there are other areas where they're going to be able to reduce the BOM. And I think it's possible, maybe not $1,000, but my prediction. Okay, actually, let's do this. Let's all predict what a Galaxy Z Fold FE is going to cost, and then we're going to mark this and come back to it and see if we were right.
Yeah.
Ara, what is your prediction for a Fold FE?
I'm hoping to see it somewhere around 11, because it was 1900, so I'm hoping to see it around $1,000-$1,100, depending on how they do the internals. I know that we pretty much still need an 800 series chip in there, so that means we're gonna have to deal with at least $200 of it going towards that processor and 5G. But I'd hope to see it around $1,000-$1,100. And please, please, please bring us some more of those sweet colors. The best part of the FE was that you got six colors to choose from, in my opinion.
All right, Joe?
I might go as high as $1,400. Just I know it gets cheaper as time goes on for Samsung to like fine-tune this process and make it, I guess, more cost-affordable for them to churn out folding phones, and there are plenty of compromises they can make, but it's difficult for me to imagine just like a year later comparing a Z Fold 2 going like $900 cheaper than, or seeing a model that's $900 cheaper than that. So I would like to see it hit 1,000 or so, but I'm going to guess that it's probably going to be a bit higher, around $1,400.
Hayato?
My thought was pretty much the same thing, about $1,400. You look at something like the S20 Plus, which launched at $1,200 back in, what, February? The S20 FE launched for $700, so they knocked off $500. I think the FE is pretty directly comparable to the Plus. You look at the differences; it's got the same processor, it's got the same specs. They basically just gave it a flat screen and a plastic back, and that's pretty much all they did. I really don't see them knocking $1,000 off of a Fold anytime soon.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that they're going to go with the 700 series. They'll go with plastic. They'll reduce the camera quality. I think they'll hit $1,000. I'm going to go with $999 because that's like the wow price, right? Samsung has their fall Unpacked event. They launch the Z Fold 3, the Z Flip 3, and then they have one more thing. They have the Z Fold FE. It's $999. The crowd goes wild. We all hug in person because we're all vaccinated. this is my dream, right?
Oh, we're all going to be vaccinated in 7 months or shush, in 8 months. Quiet. You're hilarious.
Stop. Let me have this. I need this, please.
I mean, look, in all aspects, I hope you're right. I like this scenario best.
Yeah.
And then we're all there. We're just magically all invited to this event together. The whole Android Central crew. We can hope. All right. So we'll obviously have more to talk about with this in the next couple of months, given that we are expecting the S21 series to launch January 14th. It's the earliest that the phone has ever launched. It's going to be released 2 weeks later at the end of January. And yeah, we'll, you know, not much of a break between the beginning of the year and the phone launch season. Samsung is, I guess, doing us a favor, but who knows? Whatever.
I mean, all right. CES is going to be so small this year.
I don't even want to talk about it.
Aww.
Let's talk about Stadia. Stadia turned one. It's now launching on iOS officially through Safari. This happened the same week as NVIDIA's GeForce Now solution also announced support for iOS's Safari browser. GeForce Now is also launching on every single Chrome-powered platform, so you'll be able to play it in Chrome on Android, Windows, Linux, Mac, anything that has a Chrome, Blink rendering engine, I guess. What's interesting about that is that it's native on a bunch of platforms anyway, but I guess they could do that. Stadia, celebrating a year, they're also just giving away Premiere kits right now. If you have a YouTube Premium subscription in Canada, the UK, or the US, and I think Europe as well, they're just giving you a Premiere kit, which includes a month of Stadia Pro, as well as the controller and a Chromecast Ultra. If you pre-order Cyberpunk 2077 before December 17th, which is supposed to be like a week after the game launches, weird, you get a Stadia Premiere. This is basically the Nest Mini of gaming right now. They're just giving them to anybody who wants one. Joe, you're basically the person on the crew who's played Stadia the most, and you haven't played it that much. So we don't have a ton of authority here, like our friends at 9to5 Google, whose whole team seems to be obsessed with Stadia. But what's your impression of how it's done over the last 12 months, given the challenges, the technical challenges that Google faced early on?
It's definitely made like a lot of progress and steps in the right direction. I mean, when it first launched, and I think Google kind of dropped the ball advertising it as a complete product, as opposed to saying like, this is a beta we're testing and, you know, don't expect all of this from it right at once. So I think their marketing at first is like this complete thing turned a lot of people off, but like they've been consistent over the last year of like adding some of the features they talked about when the service was first announced. They've been getting, you know, more and more games on there. There's still not a huge library, but they've been pretty steady, you know, expanding that a bit. And they've gotten like some cool exclusives. They got that Immortals Phoenix Rising demo from Ubisoft, so you can just like go on there and play that demo for free before the game comes out, and you don't need a Stadia Pro membership or anything. And they've also kind of tweaked Stadia Pro a little bit. When it first launched, it was just kind of like you get your X amount of free games every month, and then those would kind of just disappear once the month was over, similar to like PS Now or PS Plus or Xbox Live Gold. But last time I checked, it seems like they're keeping a lot of those pro games that they offer as like allowing you to claim those like even a couple months after they were initially available. So not really a subscription service for games, but you know, if you want to sign up for Stadia Pro right now, you get a fair amount of games to play. If you sign up for it,
it's also there's also family share, which means that
yeah.
You can share your pro account with, I think it's up to 5 other people. They can play the games that you've bought on your pro, which is cool.
Yeah, I think Google they've done a lot of good over the past year. Like Stadia is absolutely in a better place today than it was a year ago. I don't know what the exact value proposition is, just given how much the competition in the space is heated up. Like Amazon Luna is probably one of the more direct competitors, and that's very much so in early access right now. But that's $5.99 a month, or $5.99 or $4.99, and you get, you know, I think 50 games or so during the beta right now to play. Xbox Game Pass, if you get the ultimate thing for $15 a month, you get cloud gaming on your Android phone in addition to, you know, access to games on PC and Xbox, and they're now testing cloud streaming for PC, which is really interesting. So the notion of Stadia just still kind of existing as the one service, maybe, I guess, GeForce Now too, where you can pay for the monthly fee for the high quality cloud streaming, but you still need to purchase your games. there's still kind of a disconnect for me personally, but that also could just because I'm a console player and that kind of thing doesn't really appeal to me and I'm not the market for that. So, I think they're doing good stuff. It's just that between what Microsoft is doing and what Amazon is ramping up with Luna, I think they're going to really need to keep progressing and just keep pushing forward and try to find a way to stick up over, you know, everything else that's coming at it right now.
You've played Luna 2, which is a bit different, but the core tech seems to be the same. It's still using a PWA for iOS. There's no Android native app yet, but you've played it on, what was it, a Fire TV?
Basically everything but a Fire TV. I did it on my iMac, in an iPhone.
Okay, you played
iPad.
It on your iPad. Yeah. Okay, got it. So that is a subscription service. It's tiered subscription. So you basically subscribe to the Luna channel, and then additional channels from different publishers are going to cost various amounts per month, similar to a cable bundle. I do see that being the future, though, right? I see that subscription model being the future of game streaming. And I don't know. I think Google doesn't have a choice. Eventually, it has to launch a streaming subscription plan, right?
Oh, yeah.
It has to.
Yeah, like as someone that, and I don't play as many games as I'd like to because of time constraints, but I consider myself a fairly regular, you know, gamer and stuff, and I'll still buy like my own copies of digital games on the Xbox store from time to time if there's like a really good sale through one of the live gold deals. But like the vast majority of my games I'm just playing through Game Pass just because it's pretty affordable and it's exposed me to a lot of games I wouldn't have tried before. And I think if you're talking game streaming or just PlayStation or like Xbox console gaming, that the subscription model is just like the future that we're heading towards. I still think that there will always be the option to buy a game outright if you want to, but I don't think the subscription model is going to go away anytime soon for the gaming industry as a whole.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, Ara, we have talked a little bit about this evolution of Google One, right? We foresee Google bundling more of its services. It's already bundling more things into it. This week, I don't think we talked about it last week because episode 500 focused mainly on the best of 2020. But last week, Google announced that as of June 2021, it would remove, it would basically make all future photos and videos uploaded to the service count towards your Google One subscription or your 15 gigs of free storage. Do you foresee Stadia ever being bundled into Google One?
Maybe, but we've got a good ways to go before we get there, especially because there's just so... Google One is one of those things that it's just, it keeps expanding because we got the VPN a couple of weeks ago, which I've been using off and on my phone just because I have the 2 terabyte plan because that's what I needed. I have more than 200 gigabytes of movies on my account, so I needed 2 terabytes. But we've got the VPN, you're going to have the photo editing. The photos counting towards your cap, it's basically a matter of, okay, everything counts towards the cap instead of being able to upload a slightly lower quality version of your photo for free, which I understand Google wanting to scale back a little bit because that's just got to be like petabytes. And what's the thing above petabytes? We got to be there,
exabytes.
Right? Yeah, we got to be at like at exabytes worth of free photos that are sitting in Google's server somewhere. Because
I would love to know how much storage their servers hold.
I don't want to know how many. I don't even want to know how much it is on mine, just from all the screenshots I take. Because I almost never delete any of my old photos from work, from like doing how-tos or product photos for reviews or anything. That's all just sitting in Google Photos. So that's tens of thousands of photos a year.
I'm chaotic and delete everything after I'm done with it.
Yeah, me too. I hate just having extra crap in my storage for some reason. Mm-hmm. I think we did talk about it because Jerry was talking about how we would like pirate this new Google Photos feature by porting all of our photos to like a Pixel 1 and uploading them forever and ever.
The OG Pixel. Rest in peace, my friend.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to bring this up because like Google One just has so much potential and Google seems to be unwilling or at least slow to move to bundling the features or the services that aren't that successful into Google One, right? Like we have Google Drive, Gmail, Google Photos. We've got the VPN. We've got discounts on the Google Store.
Yeah, but what we need them to add to Google One is there needs to be a version of G Suite Essentials that's part of Google One. So that way people can get the paid Hangouts features whenever they all go away in February or whatever. Because like the new feature that came out yesterday for Chrome for Google Meet was Breakout Rooms, and I'm like, oh, that would have been wonderful for like all those virtual backyard get-togethers or the virtual happy hours, and now the virtual Thanksgivings that people are going to be having next week. Give that to users for free next week, and you will be able to get some people to sign up for it. Nope, it's only available for paid subscribers, so it's only available for this whole list of things, but it's all the paid educational and commercial stuff. But right, not regular users.
It's not at all confusing anymore because G Suite is now, or what was it? G Suite Pro is now Google Workspace or something.
Oh yeah, it's called Google Workspace, and then there's like 10 different tiers of it. But we need one version of that at least that you can get through Google One, and we need a version of Google One where you can bundle in YouTube Premium, because YouTube Premium is a bundle all on its own, not as big a one now that Google Play Music is dead. Rest in peace, my friend. But we need that in there as well, because YouTube Premium is also one of those things of it's a good deal, especially if you spend as many hours watching YouTube as so many of us do. But
guilty.
But yeah, it's one of those things that it was YouTube Premium was a better value a year or two ago than it is today. And adding it into Google One, or having a bundle of Google One that includes it and Stadia and Google Workspace Essentials, and then the photo storage and photo editing would be amazing.
I would love that, because I pay the $10 or whatever every month for YouTube Premium because I think YouTube's unusable without it, but I will never use YouTube Music. So I would love to be able to instead, you know, like bundle that in with other things I do use, like extra Google storage, and stop paying like three different subscription plans to Google.
Yeah, I pay two different subscription plans to Google right now, because I pay for the Google One subscription and I pay for the YouTube Premium subscription,
yep.
Which is still, I'm grandfathered in under the original Google Play Music pricing.
Oh yeah, the $8.99?
Well, that was if I ever swap back to a solo subscription, that's what I get, but I get the family plan for $15 a month.
What is it now?
For YouTube Premium, I think it's 21.
Ooh,
either 18 or 21.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Although I guess that makes sense, right? Because you're getting YouTube Premium, you're getting YouTube Music, and it's shared between how many people,
six.
Right?
Yeah.
All right. I could keep going on this because I just think Google has so much value that they're not giving to their customers. But Google is a company that doesn't like its customers to pay for anything unless they're business users or enterprise or education. So whatever, we'll talk about that another time. I do want to talk about these new Pixels. There are new Pixels. It's mid to late November, and we're still getting them. So the Pixel 4a 5G is now available. It was announced the same day as the Pixel 5, but came over a month later. Not sure why. We reviewed it around the same time as the Pixel 5. So it's been kind of just, we've just been waiting for it to be available. Hayato, before you smashed the shit out of it, you reviewed it.
I did.
what was your impression back then? Because I've been noodling around with it for the last couple of days in preparation for the launch, and honestly, I kind of love it. I like it. I like it a lot. So, what did you tell us what you said in the review and how your opinion has changed, if it has, since then?
It has a little bit, yeah. In my review, I said that the Pixel 5 or the Pixel 4a 5G was sort of awkwardly priced in between the 4a and the 5, where, you know, if you want the best deal, you should get the Pixel 4a. But if you want, you know, sort of a higher end phone with, you know, better performance and all that stuff, you should get the Pixel 5. Since then, you know, I mean, I've kind of come to appreciate the 4a 5G more as less so of like an awkward middle step and more of sort of this nice in between, right? Like you still get a lower price in the Pixel 5 with the same processor, the same cameras, the same pretty much everything other than a plastic back that feels totally fine. You get a bigger screen. A lot of people like that. And it's just, you know, $500. It's a really, I think, a really good price point. We sort of talked in a previous podcast about how I thought the Pixel 5 was pretty well priced. You thought it should be a little bit cheaper. And I think the 4A5G kind of gets you there, right? Like it's basically the same phone with a bigger screen for $200 less, or $100 if you're on Verizon. I do think if you're on Verizon and your only option is the 4A5G UW, just get the Pixel 5.
Oh God.
But otherwise, if you're buying unlocked, $200 less, the 4A5G is a really, really good phone. The only thing you're really missing versus the Pixel 5 is you lose the 90 hertz display, which I still don't think is a necessity. I really like having a high refresh rate, but you know,
you lose the wireless charging though, and that's
IP68.
Something I miss.
This is true.
Yeah, I don't know what's more important to me there. Like, you lose. I think wireless charging is probably more important than the waterproofing.
Really?
And the 90 hertz display is what it is. Like, I could take it or leave it, but yeah, I don't know. It's weird, like, how much I rely on wireless charging now.
I don't use it at all for charging my phone, but I do. Back when we were traveling all the time, I loved having reverse wireless for topping up my earbuds.
Hmm. Interesting. So what's interesting too is that on Black Friday, which starts the 22nd, so by the time you're hearing this, it may have begun already, it's $50 off the Pixel 5 at the Google store. So the Pixel 5 will be $650 rather than $699, which is a good deal, right? It's still not as cheap as I would like it. I think this should be a $599 phone. But let's talk a little bit about this new color of the Pixel 4a, Ara. This is as you said at the beginning, it's a really nice color. It should have been announced back when the phone was launched, but yeah, it wasn't.
It's a very pretty, like, Cinderella blue, because it's that nice, soft, powdery blue that could maybe look white under certain circumstances. It's very beautiful. I want to know who the heck decided to make this a, oh, we're going to release this the week before Black Friday, when most people who want a Pixel 4a are either have already bought their phone or are buying it on sale next week, which this one is exclusive to the Google store, so it's likely not getting any deals. And it's limited to the US, so it's basically a screw you to everybody who lives everywhere else that the Pixel 4a is available. Like, why would you hold this back?
You want to hear my conspiracy theory? My conspiracy theory is that this was supposed to be a Best Buy exclusive, and Best Buy decided that they didn't want it because nobody can go in store to see the products anymore. So Google was like, huh, what do we do with it? Okay, let's just launch it on our own store. I don't think that's real.
Juicy hot
I don't
take.
Think that's right.
I think it would have to actually be blue to be a Best Buy phone.
Yes, it does, in my mind.
I want one, and I'm pissed that they didn't have it at launch, because the people who wanted this phone and needed this phone because they were waiting for another good replacement to the Pixel 3a to be announced, all of them bought their phone already. And it's not going to be available at Amazon. It's not going to be available at Best Buy. It's not going to be available at Walmart. So it's not going to get a good deal on Black Friday unless Google announces a massive cut for the Pixel 4a, which I don't really see them doing because the phone is already a pretty decent value. We're going to get $50 off the Pixel 4a at most.
What's weird, assuming Daniel's Best Buy conspiracy theory isn't true, like, I know for them to produce like a second color, that's obviously like another manufacturing thing they have to consider, and no,
yeah,
that's
that was another expense.
And that's an expense, and that's also difficult enough like during a pandemic, but it still seems kind of odd it would take them this many months later just to release one other color option.
Oh, no, because we know the Pixel 4a was ready to go in May. We know the Pixel 4a was ready to launch months ago, so that means the blue one had to be ready to launch months ago too.
Yeah.
Which begs the question, why did that one have to sit in a warehouse for 3 more months when the boring black one is the one that got all of the attention?
Man, I would love to see this thing in person, because I'm generally a big fan of like soft pastel colors and all that. I'm really not into this color at all.
I'm just a slut for blue phones. Just give it to me.
I mean, same.
And I will find all the pretty cases for it.
Same.
I don't know. I didn't think I would like the... What was it, the purplish color of the 3A? But I did. So.
Yeah, me too, actually. That was nice.
I just wish they had kept that fluorescent yellow button with this new blue one. I mean, like, the orange is okay. It's across the color wheel, and it kind of looks like the one from the Pixel 4, but still.
Yeah,
orange and blue is just still not a still a weird color combination at times.
I think the only two Pixel colors that I've just not been a fan of at all have been the orange Pixel 4 and the like, super, super saturated blue Pixel 2?
No, Pixel 1. That was Pixel the first 1? Pixel. That was the first Pixel 1. And really, how could you be against that cobalt blue? That was so sexy.
I didn't like that one at all.
That was a Best Buy exclusive, by the way. Just saying.
Well, that was Google Store exclusive, wasn't it?
The OG, like, blue yeah. OG Pixel?
Yeah, I thought no. That was Google Store exclusive.
You could be right. There was an exclusive Pixel to Best Buy. Maybe I'm misremembering this. Anyway, whatever. Still, it's. I think also the button, the power button, is orange because all the case buttons for the 4A are orange, except for the black case. So the lighter case colors have orange buttons. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Whatever. All right. So. Pixel 4a, barely blue. It's available now at the Google Store. Go see it. Let us know if you like it. Let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we will talk about Google Pay and some Chrome 87 stuff. Oh, yeah, and fleets.
Yeet.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. One of the greatest challenges we all face is taking all the information that's available and knowing where to focus. It's the same problem with hiring. With Indeed, you have access to the largest pool of talent and can hire the right people fast. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are known to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the most important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/ACP. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/ACP. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. All right, we're back. So yesterday, as we're recording this, it's Friday, November 20th. Yesterday, Google announced a massive overhaul to Google Pay, including a bank account that it is launching in partnership with a bunch of U.S. banks, which will launch in 2021. Joe, tell us about what actually launched. Sorry, this happened on Wednesday. Tell us about what actually launched this week and how it's affecting Google Pay users who may just only care about paying with their credit card in stores.
Yeah, so the weird thing with this is that this new Google Pay app is a completely separate app you have to download whether you're on iOS or Android. It's not just going to be an update to the existing one. And that's because Google is now tying your Google Pay account with this new app to your phone number. So you can only have this new app associated to any one phone at a time. And that also means that the Google Pay website is going away next year. So for whatever that's worth. When you download the new one, it's kind of broken up into three main pages. There's Explore, Pay, and Insights. Pay is kind of like the home screen for it. And it'll show you shortcuts for people you can send money to, like you've been able to do on Google Pay for the longest time. The only quirk with that right now is that if the person doesn't already have the new Google Pay app installed on their phone and linked to that phone number, it'll show you like a bubble to invite them to it. And I had to do that with my mom when they announced it because we use Google Pay for stuff. And she was very confused why her Google Pay wasn't working. So to tell her that she had to download a new app, and it'll be a rocky transition. But once you people are on the new app, you can send money and receive money just the same. There's now like in-app chats you can do with people. You can split bills. You can send messages back and forth between them. And then all of your cards on there for using Google Pay with NFC in stores is all the same. Accessing them is just in a different spot, but you know, none of that functionality has changed. The two main differences, though, are those insights in the Explore page. So with Explore, now Google is basically kind of turning itself into a hacky version of Rakuten or something, where you can get use the link through the Google Pay app for online cashback offers, or link a cashback offer to any credit or debit card that's linked to Google Pay. So some of the stuff right now is like 1.5% cashback for PetSmart purchases in store, 2.5% online at Macy's. It's fine, but like I was looking through the Rakuten app on my phone, and you know, PetSmart's 4% in store right now through there, 10% online. Macy's is up to like 6% through Rakuten. So those offers, I'm sure, will get better, and we'll see more partners through that as time goes on. But in its current form, it just kind of feels like here's this extra thing that is still very much not fleshed out completely. So there's some interesting stuff there, and I guess there's a value of having that built into Google Pay if you don't use another app for cashback, but it's just kind of whatever at this point. And the second thing is Insights, which is Google trying to copy another app. This version of it is trying to give you personal finance insights the way something like Mint does. So you can link external bank accounts, credit and debit cards through Plaid, which is what most of these personal finance apps use. And once you do that, it'll show you like how much money is in all your accounts, how much money you've spent over the past month. It'll show you like a recent transaction history. You can search through transactions for like dining out or a specific retailer or something. And it's all interesting stuff. I'm writing an editorial about this, and I said that like the idea of having one central app for like paying friends, managing your cards for like NFC payments in store, cashback, and like this personal finance tools, like the idea of having all of that built into one thing is appealing, but it just feels like, especially with Insights and the cashback offers, like they're all very much half-baked at this point and not fleshed out the way they need to be. So like you are getting that functionality in Google Pay in one spot, but as opposed to like using Rakuten or Mint, like you're getting a lot less functionality than you would if you were just using those standalone apps that we had for a while. Like all this stuff, like I'm sure it's bound to get better as time goes on, because this is like just launched a few days ago, but personally not the biggest fan. It just feels like a lot of stuff Google's thrown in there without really building out the way it needed to be, so it just kind of all feels like added fluff for the time being.
Well, the stuff that launched this, like the new app, is an early access, so we don't know whether or not that's going to be a you have to install a new app whenever it's rolling out to everybody, right? Because at some point, the APK is just going to replace the old one, and it'll make you log in with your phone number whenever you log in the next time, right?
That's what I thought, but because like that's how it was on Android. It was like you send an invite and there was the new app to download. But on my iPhone 11 Pro, when I was checking the App Store for app updates, the old Google Pay app was just kind of like grayed out, and there was like in parentheses old app next to it, and it just would not launch. And It forced me to like download the new one. So like it seemed like it was early access, but it also kind of feels like they're just like rolling this out as like the full launch already.
Well, what they've done is they've taken over the Tez app. That's the Google Pay app in India. So what they've done is they've turned that into a universal APK for everybody. And if you download it in India, it'll be specifically tuned for that demographic, that country. But for everybody else who goes, they'll get a different APK, because that's something that Google now allows for its developer console.
When I went to the App Store to do that, all like the App Store screenshots were for like the Tez app. So like that's already on iOS too.
Right, exactly. Like I don't think they've ported everything over yet. I don't think it's early access per se, but I do think it's, you know, it's still early, like just objectively. I think it's interesting, right? There's so much potential here. Google says that 150 million people in 30 countries use Google Pay every month. It's not clear what that means, right? If it's just them like tapping the Google Pay app or using the app to like, you know, find a loyalty card number, that might be construed as using Google Pay. But I like Google Pay. I think it's a good system. I think it works. It's reliable. This is extremely ambitious. As you said, it's trying to like take over four or five separate apps on your phone and incorporate them all into one thing. Nobody else can really do that except the platform owner. Like Apple does it a little bit with Wallet, but even Wallet is pretty, it's not nearly as ambitious as this. This is like Mint and Concur and Venmo and your bank app all rolled into one.
I was saying, it's even too, like I was digging through it a bit and they've got tools in there too. Like within the Google Pay app, you can order like takeout from restaurants. You can, if you go to a gas station like Shell or something, you can integrate with their system where if you go next to the station, you just punch in the number to link your card and start pumping gas. And they have something for paying at parking meters. So like it's also kind of replacing like ParkWiz, DoorDash, and like Shell or any other gas station app you would use for those kind of mobile payments that way. Like it's doing so much, and that's not even accounting for them also doing this Plex bank account next year. Like it's crazy to think about just how much they baked into this with like one update.
Yeah, putting fuel on the fire for this antitrust case that's building in the Justice Department right now. I think obviously this is a US only launch right now. It'll expand as we go, but I think there's more to like here than not like. It's typical Google, you know, they're throwing everything at the wall and eventually some of it will stick and some of it won't. But this is better for people in the long run, especially people who, you know, may dabble in Mint and Rakuten and Concur, but like not really use them to any great extent. You may just be able to use everything in one app from now on. And it just depends on whether you already use Google Pay, you're comfortable with the UI, and you trust Google with all of your financial stuff. So that's a whole other thing. Let's talk a little bit about Chrome 87. So this was a bigger deal than I think some of us realized, only because, you know, Google is claiming that, I mean, Chrome is a beast, right? It's a very, very slow, compared to Firefox and Safari, it's very slow. It's ungainly. It takes up a ton of RAM. Google says that Chrome 87 is going to give you an extra hour of battery life. It's considerably faster. It reduces CPU draw by 5 times. Tabs that you're not using will not be draining back battery power in the background. It's smarter, et cetera, et cetera. This is a big deal, right? It's something that we've been waiting a long time for Google to commit to. And the Omnibar is actually going to be somewhere that you can type these actions, like delete my history, sort of like a Google Assistant. And it'll all work just from that Omnibar. Ara, what do you think? I mean, you use a Chromebook as your primary computer. Does this excite you at all? Or what should Chrome users on a Mac or a PC expect from this?
I mean, I'm always happy to see any speed updates, anything that can make Chrome faster and more efficient, which is what it really comes down to when we're talking about battery efficiency. Most Chromebooks already get like 8 hours of battery life is the bottom end of a Chromebook these days. Like if it only gets 8 hours of battery, chances are it's either a 2 or 3 year old model or you just bought a basic low budget computer, or you bought something that was super duper thin like the new Galaxy Chromebook, which is just too thin to actually have a decent battery in it. So I'm happy to see more battery life across the board. I'm really anxious to see what this will do for Chromebooks like the new Acer 311, which gets 12 to 14 hours of battery life on a charge, because an extra hour or two could push this from being a 1 day Chromebook to being a 2 day Chromebook before you need to recharge, which I'm not going to lie, I sometimes just leave my Chromebook on the couch and forget to go throw it back on the charger, but when I go to bed. So that'll be interesting to see. I'm also very anxious to see how much the improvements for Chrome help on Android, since after all, a lot of us spend most of our time doing most of our general browsing on our phone, because it's like, oh, I'm looking for a restaurant. I'll start in like Maps, or I'll start in some other peripheral site, and then I will go to Chrome to look at like the website and the hours, the reviews.
I reviewed the M1 MacBook Air this week for iMore, and what I found really interesting was, so I used Chrome on Rosetta initially, had to switch over to Safari because it was just chugging. Google released Chrome version for ARM, and it's been great, but it's clear that Google really understands its audiences, right? Like, they're not investing in Chrome on ARM for PC users, because that's just not a big audience, I guess. Most Windows users are still on x86. Android users will benefit from this release far more than on iOS. iOS, obviously, the rendering engine is Safari on the back end. So Google says that Android users will see much faster load times, and switching between tabs is going to be basically instantaneous because of pre-caching. As you know, I spend less time in Chrome as I do in the sort of the web view, but web view on Android right now is basically a full version of Chrome. So this is, this is a good thing.
This is a great thing for anybody who uses Chrome.
Yeah,
I'm a little bummed because I just switched to Safari like the day before they announced this, and it's been great. Like, my battery life has been
never
way
too late.
Better.
You can always come back.
You know,
we still love you.
The thing is, I have never really loved Chrome to begin with. I just kind of use it because that's what everything supports. But like, Chrome is fine. I'm just not like, you know, enthusiastic about it. I've been really enjoying Safari, but I mean, I'm probably at least going to try the new Chrome just to see if it is like that much better.
Who's enthusiastic about their browser anymore?
Oh, lots of people on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, look, it's a tool, right? You get used to one browser, you download a million extensions. If you try to switch, there's that issue of like trying to find equivalents. That was me. I like Safari. I think it's a good browser, but there aren't equivalents to every extension that I need on Chrome, and it brought me back to Chrome very quickly. So, I don't know. Let's. Joe had to drop off, by the way, if anybody's wondering why we're not hearing from him. Let's finish off by talking about fleets. I'm so sorry, but I do want to talk about this because Hayato, you are active on Twitter. It's a thing that Twitter is launching. It's basically a story at the top of your Twitter feed. Tell us what it is, why you think why you think Twitter is launching it, and what it means for the platform going forward.
Yeah, so I mean, if you've ever used, you know, Snapchat stories or Instagram stories, fleets are basically the exact same thing. They're these ephemeral photo-based messages that disappear within 24 hours. You know, just like on Instagram stories, they get pinned up at the very top of your timeline. You just have little circular icons of everybody's profile pictures, who you follow, who has posted a fleet. And it's still super basic right now. It just came out a couple of days ago, so it's in its very early state. But it really is pretty much identical to Instagram stories. And a lot of people have pushed back on this. A lot of people are kind of just saying, like, you know, why I don't want stories in yet another platform. And I see that perspective. I kind of felt that for a second. But, you know, the thing about stories is, or fleets or whatever they're called on any different platform, people like to see their friends and their favorite creators. They like to see the faces of the people they follow. And these kinds of super quick to post, you know, no standard for super high quality, these kinds of posts like that are a really easy way for those people to, you know, connect with the people that follow them. It's a really easy way to just post what you're doing, show your face. People can remember what you look like even during quarantine. And maybe more importantly, they're a great way to promote things that you really want to highlight that's going on in your day. So I think a lot of people tend to tweet just anything that's on their mind, right? Like you don't carefully think about every single tweet you send out. It's just like, oh, I'm hungry. I'm going to tweet like, hey guys, what should I have for lunch today? Fleets can be a bit more specific, and you can use it to, you know, I shared one of my tweets onto a fleet, which I hate saying, but I did that yesterday when I posted a video to sort of bring more attention to that video. And it, you know, you can look at the analytics on it, and it got like it's had like 400 views, which I've got, I think, I don't know, almost 5,000 followers. So it's a 10% ratio. That's not fantastic, but considering this feature is less than a week old, that's pretty good turnover, I think.
And considering that this is a mobile only feature, so all of us who are doom scrolling in one tab while we're working in another miss out on fleets entirely.
Right. So I do think that's one of its bigger problems right now. I would love for them to bring it to the web, just like Instagram eventually did with stories. But I think with Instagram, it took what, a year, maybe 2 years to bring stories to just the web client.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But also, like, I don't know anybody who uses the Instagram web interface.
I do every single day. It's, at least for stories, really? it's way easier for me to just clear through a bunch of stories that I'm, you know, like kind of go through that backlog. It's easier to just do that by hitting the arrows on my keyboard instead of like tapping on my phone and then accidentally tapping somebody's poll or tapping their, you know, their question buttons or whatever else. Like, I hate running into that on mobile.
Interesting. I mean, I love that we use our social platforms so differently, because it just speaks to the challenges that these companies face, right? Google, my God. I want nothing to do with fleets on my laptop or like anything but a phone. I don't think it suits the platform, the screen size in any way, except a vertically oriented, like, stories were built this way. They were built on Snapchat for vertical consumption. They transitioned there on Instagram that way. I still think they look the best on that, you know, consume that way. TikTok as well has embraced that vertical form factor. I don't see that changing anytime soon with fleets. I don't think Google, oh my God. Just shoot me. Take me out back. I don't think Twitter is going to be in a rush to bring fleets to the desktop anytime soon.
I think they should, because it's, if you just get on Twitter on your computer, you know, like it's if it's on the screen, there's a higher possibility you're just going to click it because it's there, and you're just going to watch it because I think the biggest reason I watch Instagram stories on my computer so often is because I'm just already on my computer. I'm already on Instagram.com. It's just a button and I can just view it there instead of having to switch to a different device. I think that really helps with discoverability, with just, you know, social media is kind of, I mean, it's designed to keep your eyes glued to it at all times, but I try not to, you know, stare at my phone all day. And if I don't have to, you know, if I can stare at my laptop for 5 minutes instead of pulling my phone out and then getting distracted and using that for hours because I just wanted to view a story, I think that's a little better for me, at least.
I mean, isn't the better version of that just don't check your phone until you're ready to take a nice long break?
In an ideal world where people have self-control, yes, but we live...
I don't have self-control. That's still how I do it.
Sounds like you have more than you think.
So interesting that I barely ever watch YouTube videos on my laptop.
Like, really?
I only watch YouTube on my phone. I do so much on my phone now.
Oh, I hate watching YouTube on my phone.
But how much YouTube do you watch on your TV?
Very little. I mainly consume YouTube on my phone, like, period.
Joe popping back in, but yeah, YouTube on the TV is the way to go.
Well,
yes.
I think that varies depending on your living situation. Like, if you live by yourself, I think you're a lot more likely to watch all YouTube on TV. But, like, you know, I live with my fiance, and we watch a lot of YouTube videos that we're both interested in on the TV, but, you know, we understand which, like, what kind of videos the other person is not interested in, and we watch those on our laptops or our phones.
I mean, I co-watch, right? Like we watch it. We watch a show on, we watch a show on TV, and then I'll like be doing something on Twitter. My wife will be doing something else on Instagram. Like that's just what we do.
Yeah.
If I find a YouTube video that we both want to watch, we'll pause the thing on TV and then we will watch it on my phone together. That is just the way it works in my house. I don't know if
casting.
That's unique.
Casting is a thing made specifically for this.
It is, but it's one more layer that I don't think is necessary. My phone is usually a massive computer in my pocket, right? I'm right now using an iPhone 12 Pro Max. It's a 6.7 inch screen. That is a screen plenty big enough for me to share with somebody else on the couch. I don't think I'm losing out on anything by watching it on my phone. And it's faster, so why not? I don't know. If I need to, I'll cast it, but I don't think I do.
Yeah.
Personal preference. Anyway, so fleets. Let's finish this off. So we're not really sure what's going to happen with it. It's janky right now
to the point
where it's basically unusable. But eventually, it'll become a pretty popular feature, I think. And I'm already seeing differences in it because the audience I have on Twitter is much more public. I don't curate my followers nearly as much as I do on Instagram. And that's why the content I make for Fleets is going to be different.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that the other day. Like I think we kind of both agreed we keep different sets of friends and whatever else on Instagram versus Twitter. So it's nice to have kind of the same feature for different audiences. I really like that. Like, one of the things I've enjoyed with Fleets already is that trend that you started where, you know, you prompted anybody that follows you to start doing office tours while we're all quarantined. And like, you can't even tag people in video Fleets right now. But even then, you know, like I've seen probably half a dozen people at least doing like long form Fleet stories or whatever, just based on your prompt, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm a trendsetter. What can I say?
Yeah.
I wanted to see what would happen. A lot of people were already using the feature, but I also think it lends itself more. Like, I don't like putting my work life on Instagram. I don't like putting my daughter on Twitter. You know, the people who follow me on Instagram, it's a different audience. They don't expect me to be talking about the latest headphones. Like, I've tried. It doesn't work. Whereas on Twitter, that's the expectation. And I think that's why Google, oh my God, Twitter knows that Twitter knows that its audience is very different from Facebook's and different from Instagram. So that's basically what it is. All right. I'm not even gonna say the word again. So we're gonna change and end off with what's making us happy this week. Ara, I see you're the only one who's written anything in the show notes, so we'll start with you. What's making you happy this week?
Two things are making me happy. The first one is the farm. There's a little farm that I go to north of Walt Disney World that has they have pick your own fruit during certain portions of the year, and strawberry season is finally upon us again. So I'm going to be able to have fresh picked strawberries from now till like May, minus the month that I go home and see my folks. And speaking of my folks, my mom came and visited me this last weekend and then Monday and Tuesday, and it was very nice to have somebody actually here again and actually go do things with people. It's been a while since I've done things with people. It's weird. It's nice, but it's weird.
Strange. Well, that's lovely. I'm glad you enjoyed having your parents visit. Hayato, what's making you happy this week?
So I've kind of realized recently that, you know, I kind of get fatigued with new things coming to my door, new devices. You know, like it's always like, oh, here's another phone, here's another tablet, whatever. I've realized I really enjoy getting new microphones. I think that's what excites me the most. Even though I'm not really like a big, I'm not like an audio technician or anything that like microphones aren't a huge benefit to me outside of work, but I still love getting them. And Shure just sent me their new MV7 microphone. It's like a smaller version of the SM7B, which is one of the most famous and universally beloved microphones of all time. And this one, you know, it uses XLR just like the SM7B, but it also can run just off of USB. Unfortunately, it's micro USB, but they give you a USB-C to micro cable in the box, which is interesting. And it's, I mean, that's what I've been using for this podcast. So hopefully that sounds good. It's been really nice to test a new mic for the last couple of days. I really, really like this thing. And I don't know how I'm going to review it on the site because we don't really necessarily have ways of hosting just little sound bites. But I have really been having fun with this thing.
I mean, SoundCloud embeds are a thing, right?
I don't know. Are they? On our site?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an HTML you embed.
Fair enough.
There it does sound really good. I mean, not that your other one didn't, but this does sound very, very crisp.
So. Yeah, I've been using a shotgun mic for the last, I don't know, year or two. And it's a great, great mic, but it's not really meant for this kind of thing, like for podcasting or VOs, which is pretty much all I use it for.
Yeah.
So this makes a bit more sense.
I'm supposed to be getting it too. I haven't heard from Shure, but I'm very excited because my XLR mic is not of the greatest quality. So I'm really looking forward to it. Joe, do we have you back?
You do. Awesome. I have arrived again. I think I'm going to reuse my Series X as that's what was making me happy in episode 499, but that was right when it was, or when I was waiting for it to be delivered. So I've actually had the chance to play around with it and use it for the past, I don't know, week or so. And it is really, really nice. I know there's always the comments of, oh, there's no games for it or whatever, but it is a lot snappier than my Xbox One S that I'm upgrading from, and load times are like basically non-existent for all the games I've been playing. And I've just been going through a bunch of old stuff I've been meaning to check out. I'm playing some Assassin's Creed Origins because that was like $25 for that and Odyssey on the Xbox store the other day. Finally playing Ori and the Blind Forest, I think is the first one.
Yeah, that's an amazing game.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like a very simple platformer when I first turned it on, but oh my God, it is very difficult for some of those levels.
Yeah, yeah. Will of the Wisp is even harder, so.
Oh, great.
it's a beautiful game.
Yeah, it's so pretty. But I've just been playing through like stuff I've been wanting to play for a couple weeks or a couple months and just kind of waiting for the Series X because I knew it would perform better and look a little bit nicer. And it's been fantastic. I've really, really been enjoying the console, even though it's like a monolith behind my TV right now.
Hit me up the next time you want to play Halo.
Thankfully, I'm not the biggest Halo person, so I'll be okay when it comes out in 3 years or whatever.
Which Halo, Hayato?
I've got the Master Chief Collection, but I really, really love playing Firefight on ODST.
Okay.
That's been my favorite lately. Sam Contreras on our team got me into that real big. That's like the only time I fire it up.
I have Master Chief Collection. I also have a Series X that I haven't unboxed yet.
Let's go.
I've never played ODST.
Yeah, it's, I think you have to buy it. Is that additionally
the,
for like
the
$5
down, like the isometric one?
No, I forget what that one's called, but no, it's
that's
not.
That's Halo Wars, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think it's on Game Pass, though, if you have that, Daniel. It should be on there.
I do. I am embarrassed to say I basically played Halo 1 and then Halo 2, and I never played the other ones. I didn't get to ODST. Oh, Halo 3 is ODST. Okay, that makes more sense.
Well, no, ODST is like an offshoot of 3.
Oh, okay.
I'm embarrassed
to say I don't know enough about the Halo universe here.
You're just like a normal person instead of Master Chief in ODST. So it's it's very different because you're a lot more vulnerable, but I kind of like that.
I mean, you're not that much of a normal person. You're still a super soldier to a degree.
Yeah, you're not like fitted with the same, you know, the same armor that makes you a lot more impervious to like serious injury.
All right, maybe you can give me like, we can play the Halo games together, like the multiplayers.
Honestly, I would love that. They've got co-op campaign. I would be down literally anytime. Hit me up.
Oh, amazing. Okay, great. I'm so excited. I want to get back into Halo. I loved the first two games. So.
Same.
Cool. Sorry, we took over your thing, Joe. You want to finish it off?
That's about it. But I'll, I'll, I'll say that I'm as, oh my God, even though I'm not much of a Halo person, I will absolutely jump in for any multiplayer sessions between the three of
us. Okay, maybe we can get like an AC wide or maybe even like a Mono wide thing going. Because I know all the Windows Central people obviously have Halo.
I'd be so down for that. I'm not a big like shooter game kind of guy these days, but I just have always loved Halo. I'm so down.
See, okay, that needs to be one of our virtual holiday party things is doing a like AC versus WC matches on Halo.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah, well, that's not a bad idea. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. All right, I'll finish it off. What's making me happy this week is the MacBook Air M1. Honestly, this thing is insane. I dabble in iMore related reviews. I reviewed the iPhone 12 Pro. I'm using the 12 Pro Max right now. I was very lucky to be in the first round of M1 reviews. This thing is ridiculous. The wow moment came. Like, I've had a lot of wow moments, but like last night, I was cleaning my desk, and normally when I clean my desk and I remove my 13-inch MacBook Pro from its stand, I have to be careful where to put my hand underneath it because it's so hot. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. It's just always hot if it's been on for a few days. And I did that, and I braced myself for the MacBook Air, and it was completely cool. It was not even remotely close to being lukewarm. It was like I just turned it on. And this was after using it all day yesterday. This thing is so efficient. The battery life is so good. I'm excited not just because of like not just for Mac users, but for the entire PC industry. It is going to force Intel and AMD and Qualcomm to do better on their low powered laptop chips. And it's going to be a huge, huge, huge benefit to everybody in the industry. So that's it. I'm excited about that.
I'm so jealous. I've just been staring at the trade-in screen on Apple's site like all week, just trying to get rid of this terrible MacBook I can't stand using.
Yeah, I hear you. I have the same one as you, and it's not even close anymore.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's where we'll end it this week. I just want to thank everybody for who tried to tune into last week's live stream. That was entirely my fault. I did not realize that the platform we were using limited live streams to people in our organization. Google, that time I meant Google, prevents you from doing that. It prevents you from just linking out to a Google Meet for anybody to view. We should have used YouTube next time. We will use YouTube. So I am so sorry about that. I'm still working on getting the video of that episode 500 live, but I should be doing that in the next couple of days. So check back to the episode 500 blog post, and it'll be embedded there. It'll also be, I'm going to host it on my personal YouTube channel. So you'll be able to find it. And yeah, thanks to everybody for sending in questions, for supporting the show, and just for being awesome. So that's it this week. We will be back again. I'm sure there will be lots more news next week to go over.
No, there won't.
Oh yeah, we're not recording next week.
Next week's Black Friday.
No. We are going to record next week. We'll do it on Wednesday.
There's just not going to be news. There's just going to be tons of sick deals.
What if we just record episode of it's just all the runoff audio of our like meet call where we're all just talking about the new deals.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to be fun for people. No, we will record next week, but we'll record on Wednesday because Thursday is Thanksgiving. I'm Canadian, so I forget sometimes. Black Friday is next Friday. I guess go to Android Central and look at our deal stuff. We have so much. It's hard to even know where to start. We're already posting deals, and there are tons. But yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Please be safe. Please, please, please don't visit family. I'm imploring you not to. But meet them on Google, Zoom, Microsoft Teams, or whatever. And that's it. You can find Joe at JoeMaring1. You can find Hayato at Hayato Huseman. You can find Ara at Ara Wagco. You can find me at Journey Dan. Find all of us at Android Central. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.